don't want to listen to my mother. Want to go outside and play right now.
And my little brother looked at her, and he went...
Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne. Here's something I believe. The talents and skills that will define us as we grow aren't always apparent as strengths when they first come into our lives. Sometimes we grow into the strength of those things by stumbling around a bit. In our first story, one of our favorite storytellers, Lynn Ford, tells about a time when she told a story long before she was an internationally beloved storyteller. It's a tale full of mischief and mistakes, and we think you'll enjoy it. She calls this story My First Story. Here's Lynn Ford on The Appleseed.
I'm so excited to share stories with you, but this is not something new for me. My mother says I've been telling stories since I was 3 years old. At that age, the stories were often called lies. And I was very good at telling them, but they didn't get me out of trouble. Because at that age, I didn't understand that even a made-up story has to make sense. Now, I was a very sickly baby, and I spent a lot of time in the hospital up until the time I was almost four. I'm partially deaf in my right ear because of the illnesses I had. But make no mistake, that also means I'm partially hearing. Just depends on your attitude about the whole thing. And I had learned to read people's lips and watch their faces and their body language for what I didn't hear with my right ear. So I already had storytelling skills in place. Now, according to my mother, who is 96 years old and never forgot anything I did that was wrong, I'd come home from the hospital and I wasn't allowed to play with the other children. This was in Appalachian, Pennsylvania. And across the street from our house was a cornfield. And that street was actually a road, a brick road, with the bricks kind of this way and that way and wibbly and wobbly, so cars didn't use our street. You could play outside all day long, and when somebody whistled or hollered for you, that's when you came in. I wasn't allowed to do that because I had one more visit with my doctor, Dr. Woods, a very sweet man. And if he said everything was healthy, I could play with other children. My mother said I crossed my arms, poked out my lip, glared at her, and said, I want to go outside and play. She said, well, you can't, honey. One more visit. Don't want to wait one more visit. Want to go outside and play right now. Listen to your mother. I'm trying to make sure you don't get sick again. Don't want to listen to my mother. Want to go outside and play right now. Are you yelling at your mother? No, ma'am. One more visit. Just one more visit. And she said I went from being my angry self to my pitiful pouty self. And neither one worked on my mother. But mommy... All the children in the whole wide world are playing outside. They're running in the cornfield. I want to go outside and play. My mother said, shut up. Because there really weren't any tears, I was just making noise. And as I said, my mother didn't fall for any of that. And she said, well, you could do something with me. We could clean something. I don't want to clean anything. I want to go outside and play. Well, you could play with your grandma. No, I can't. I cannot play with grandma. She's old. Keep in mind, I'm about the age my grandma was then. And we can play. We just can't get up off the floor as quickly. I said, Grandma does not know how to play anymore. She won't run around the dining room table and slide underneath it on her belly button. She says she's gonna break something. She won't jump up and down on the bed, see if she could hit her head on the ceiling. She said that don't make no sense and she's gonna break something. I can't play with Grandma. I need to be out with the children. My mother said she gave up and said, find something to do yourself. I have work to do. She said she didn't even get to the kitchen door from the living room before she heard a sound. She came back to the living room door, and now I was in the middle of the room looking as sweet and innocent as I possibly could, which let her know something was wrong. She looked around and saw a crack in her lamp on the table. And she asked the question that only needs a non-fiction answer. Two words, you've all heard them. What happened? My mother said, I told her, I didn't do it. She said, you didn't do what? I said, I didn't put the crack in that lamp. Well, if you didn't put the crack in the lamp, how do you know what I'm talking about? I didn't do it. Lynette Jean Cooper, when they say your whole name, you're gonna die. So I went from my gruff face to my pitiful face, and she asked again what happened, and she said that's when she knew I was the next storyteller in the family, fourth generation storyteller. It wasn't me. I wasn't over there by that lamp. I was all the way over by the door. I was gonna reach out and get the mail when Mr. Mitch the mailman came, and I was gonna bring it in the house and put it on the kitchen table for my grandmother and my mother because I like to do things to help other people. But when I opened up the door just a little bit to see if the mail was there, the cat ran in the house. And the cat started running around and around and around in the living room. And I tried to catch the cat, but I'm too little and I've been sick. And then the cat started jumping up and down on the sofa and bouncing in and out of the chairs. And the cat jumped and he bumped the lamp and the lamp fell over and it hit the wall. And when it hit the wall, it cracked just a little bit, but I didn't do that. It was the cat. That's all that happened. And my mother said she was kind of proud of me because I hadn't said very much when I came home from the hospital, maybe a few days before. You see, I had a speech impediment because I didn't hear effectively, and I was still trying to figure out how to put the sounds and the words together. And I knew when people teased me or laughed at me, so I didn't say much. And when I was angry, I didn't talk at all, and I'd been angry for days. And here I was telling a story with a beginning, a middle, kind of a shaky ending. It had action and adventure, characterization, good things for your storytelling. But there was a problem with this story. I was smart enough to tell it, but we didn't even have a cat. And I hadn't thought about that. So my payment for my very first tall tale was to sit in the corner and think about what I had done. And apparently I thought I did a good job telling that story. You see, now I get paid for what put me in the corner when I was 3 years old. It's a matter of figuring out what your gifts are and using them in an effective way. And my gift is that I am a storyteller.
That was Lynn Ford with My First Story. We're glad she kept telling stories and glad to bring that one to you. When I think of the earliest examples of gifts and skills in the lives of the people close to me, I often think of my daughter. She's always loved to make things. Every Valentine's Day at our house was characterized by a big pile of construction paper and paint and glue and wire and string and tape on the dining room table where we'd sit and make elaborate Valentines. Not even as gifts, really, mostly just for our own amusement. The same dining room table at Easter was covered with eggs and things to color them with. Halloween would be covered in pumpkins that would become jack-o'-lanterns. And in the early days of those traditions, my daughter would peer over at the Valentine I was making, or the Easter egg I was decorating, or the jack-o'-lantern I was carving. and her face would have on it the look of a student, someone who wanted to learn from the person she was watching. And I liked being the teacher. I wasn't great at those things, but I liked it that she delighted to see the things that I made unfolding under my hands. Well, my daughter is now the master at all those activities. Her Valentines are delicate, three-dimensional works of art. Her jack-o'-lanterns are complex, multimedia creations that belong in museums, to say nothing of the intricate designs she makes on Easter eggs using exotic inks and following traditional painting and dyeing techniques from other lands. And she makes pots out of clay and windows of colored glass, and she embroiders and knits, and it's all amazing. And of course she was going to do all these things. But it was hard for her to see into that future when she was small. It's hard to see how the things we're just beginning to play with will turn into the skills that define us as we grow. I'm proud of my daughter, of what she has become, of what she is becoming, and the road to getting there, too. And that's where Lynn's story about an early attempt at something that she would later be very, very good at took me. Where did it take you, and who will you take along? Our next story comes from the renowned storyteller Donald Davis. Now, if you're familiar with Donald's tales, you know that, like Lynn, he has a gift he's had since he was a child, a gift for mischief. In this story, assisted by his brother, Donald applies that gift to a particular task. What's the task? Well, the story is called Getting Rid of the Babysitter. Here's Donald Davis on The Appleseed.
When I was a little boy, and even when my brother, who's almost 3 years younger, when he was little, we never really had a babysitter because our mother was with us all the time. And if our mother wasn't with us, we were probably at our grandmother's house. But when I got to the second grade and my little brother Joe was old enough to go to kindergarten, my mother, who had not taught school from the time I was born till we both went to school, she was going to go back to teaching again. And so once in a while, we needed a babysitter. Well, up the road from where we lived, there lived this little old lady named Miss Annie McIntosh. And Miss Annie became our once-in-a-while babysitter. She was old. I mean, she could have been 50. She was probably, though, closer to 80. And she had this little old 39 Chevy that she drove. And sometimes she'd come to our house, and sometimes we'd go to her house. And we loved it when we would go to her house, because since she was an old lady, she took naps. And when she took naps, we could prowl all over her house. It had an attic, it had upstairs, it had downstairs, it had a basement. We could just go everywhere, and we just loved it. But we began to get older. And as we began to get older, we got to that age where we didn't want to have a babysitter anymore. And we tried to explain that to our mother and daddy, but our mother was not very smart. And she just kept calling the babysitter. Well, one of the things we loved about going up to Miss Annie's house was, beside her house, she had a little garage apartment. And there was a man who lived there who was a policeman. He was actually the assistant police chief. His name was Robert Louis Fitzgerald. He was not married. And he would drive a police car home. And when we go to her house, he let us play in the police car. He would show us how to mash a button that would go, wow, wow, wow. We could play with these, you know, spotlights on either side of the car, and he would fix a microphone so we could talk, and our voice would come out through the, you know, through the front of the car, and we could turn the light on top, and it was great fun playing with the policeman in the police car. He was fairly young, so, and he didn't have any kids, so he liked playing with us too. Well, we got to that age, and we started telling our mother, you know, we're too old for a babysitter. We don't need a babysitter anymore. And our mother just kept saying, I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think so. And we kept having to put up with having a babysitter. Well, one day my mother said, "Now, boys, tonight, your daddy and I are going over to the Nesbitt's house. We're going to have supper, and they're going to have some more friends there, and we're going to be there for a little while. And we've called Miss Annie to come and be your babysitter while we're gone." Well, my little brother said, "We don't need her." Now, my little brother was a little bit like my Uncle Frank in that he also was born without a lid to go on his mouth. And sometimes my mother would just let my little brother's mouth run to see what was going to come out of it. And so instead of arguing with him, she said, "What do you mean by that?" He said, "She's too old to be a babysitter." My mother said, "Really?" My brother said, "She can't make us do anything. If we do what she says, it's because we want to, not because we're scared of her." And my mother said, "Really?" And my brother said, "Yes, really. She is so old that nothing on her even works but her mouth. And I can outrun her." And my mother just laughed and said, "Well, we'll see about that." Well, we had our supper early, and then in a little while, here came Miss Annie. She was coming down to our house to stay with us. She came in her little Chevy, and she parked in front of the house, and she came inside, and she talked a little bit with my mom and daddy, and they left. And she said, "Well, boys, you've had your supper. Would you like to hear a nice story? Do you want me to read to you before you go to bed?" And my little brother said, "Stories are stupid. We're too old for stories. We can read for ourselves. You don't need to read to us." She said, "Well then, what do you boys want to do? Because it's not quite time to go to bed." And we said, "We want to watch television because we had our first ever brand new television. We got only one channel." Channel 13 in Asheville, North Carolina. So we didn't spend a lot of time finding out there was nothing to watch. So we went over and we turned on the television, and do you know there was a special program about the circus? And we started watching that show about the circus, and it was just wonderful. They came out, and they would swing on the trapeze and fly through the air and catch each other and fly through the air. And my little brother looked up, and he said, "I wish I could do that." And then they came out, and they walked on the tight wire, you know, back and forth, keeping balance and balance. And my little brother said, "Oh, I wish I could do that." And then a man came out on a little kind of motorbike, and he got inside a big ball that looked like it was made out of wire. And he rode around and around inside the ball, and my brother almost cried. He said, "Oh, I wish I could do that." And then acrobats came running out, and they just were flipping through the air and flipping through the air and flipping through the air and flipping through the air. And all of a sudden, my brother just said, "We can do that." And we started playing circus while we watched the program right then. They would flip through the air, and we would flip through the air, and they would run and jump, and we would run and jump. And pretty soon, we had all the cushions from all the furniture in the living room and the floor. And we were going down the hall, and we would run down the hall and jump in the air and land on a cushion and flip over and land on the other side. And then we would watch a little bit more, the acrobats, to get more ideas so we could do even more. And all of a sudden, here came my little brother running down the hall. He had taken off his shoes and socks so he wouldn't slip on the floor. And he took a great leap in the air, and he landed on the cushion on his hands with his feet up in the air, and the cushion slipped. And he fell over sideways, and he hit the table, and he knocked my mother's brand new 4.5 book S&H green stamps lamp off of that table. And it went bam against the wall, and it hit the floor, and the light went out, but it didn't break. And Miss Annie said, "Well, boys, that's enough circus. It is now time to go to bed. And my little brother looked at her, and he went, and took off running toward the other end of the house. She did not go after him. She just reached down and picked up her pocketbook, hung it over her arm, walked out the door of our house, got in her car, and left. And my brother and I danced around. We won, we won. We got rid of a babysitter. We won, we won. And we proceeded to totally turn the house into the absolute circus. We would turn chairs upside down and run up the back of the chair and flip off the other side. We got on top of the dining room table and we pretended that crack, you know, where you could pull it over, that was the tight wire. And we were walking back and forth on the crack on the table. And my little brother got hold of the curtains and he said, "I'm going to swing across the room." And right then, there was a knock at the door. And my brother Joe ran to the door, and I went over and looked out the window. And when I looked out the window, there parked in front of our house was a police car with the light going around on the top. And my little brother opened the door, and there stood Robert Louis Fitzgerald with his gun out. And we said, "What do you want?" And he said, "Where are your parents?" We said, what are you here for? What do you want?" He said, "Well, we just had a report that somebody is wrecking the Davis's house. Where are your parents?" I said, "What do you need them for?" He said, "Well, so I can put them in jail for leaving children at home without anybody to watch them." By then, he was in our house, looking around. He said, "I've never seen a place torn up like this place. Where are your parents?" He said, "Look, I've got two pairs of handcuffs, one for each one of them. They're going to have to go to jail for this." And my little brother says, "Don't put my mom in jail. She doesn't know what to do in jail. I don't know about my daddy." He said, "Well, they left you without a babysitter. That's what I got to do. Unless you boys got another idea." My little brother said, "Well, I really like it when Miss Annie McIntosh gets to be my babysitter." He said, "Well, let me call her and see if she might be able to come." And he picked up our telephone. By the time he finished that call, we had the house fixed back better than it was to start with. And as he drove away, here she came back in her little Chevy. She came in the door and she said, "Well, boys, you want to watch some more television?" My brother said, "No, it's no good." "What we'd like is a story." And then I said, "Is it okay to go to bed now? Because we got real tired." And we both got in our beds, and she came in our room and sat between us, and she read us a story. I have no idea what that story was about, because I was just sitting there trying to imagine my mother in handcuffs. Well, finally, our parents came home, and I knew there were going to be a lot of questions, and so I thought, I'm just going to let my little brother handle these questions, because he likes for his mouth to run. My mother said, "Well, boys, how'd you get along?" He said, "Just fine." She said, "Did you watch television, the new television? Did you watch a program?" He said, "Not much. It wasn't any good." Miss Annie read us a story. We asked her to read us a story. We like stories. It was a real good story. My mother said, "Oh, well, what was it about?" I had no idea. My brother said, "It was about these two little boys. They almost got in trouble, but not quite." Well, that old lady was our babysitter till we were both graduated from high school. But the important thing I got to learn way early in life, when some people don't learn it till it's almost too late, and that is this. If you were messing with an old lady, it doesn't matter if nothing on her works but her mouth. You are going to lose.
That was Donald Davis with Getting Rid of the Babysitter. What gifts have you learned to use better and better over time? Have you ever gotten something you wished for but immediately regretted it, like Donald and his brother? Did you ever get caught exhibiting some bad behavior and ultimately learn from it, like Lynn? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. We might share them on the show. You can tag us on social media or send us a message at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, at byu.edu. We want to thank Lynn Ford and Donald Davis for sharing their stories with us today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own. If you like The Appleseed, check out Kaboom, another BYU radio podcast filled with fantastical audio adventures for the whole family, wherever you get your podcasts.